Okay. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for showing up this evening. Appreciate you doing so. Just like to move the call to the meeting to order. And we do have two guests. Would you like to introduce?
Yes, let me introduce our guests tonight. They are Loudoun County staff, and we have with us Deputy Director Jamie Cook and Transit Services Administrator Gladys Hurwitz. And I don't know if you wanted to say anything or.
I'll say thanks for having me. I came over from Montgomery County, so pretty good transit diverse situation system over there. And I'm so happy to find that we have this entity here to get input from the community, because I think it's very important to get your perspective on things. We tend to look at things one way, and you can bring a fresh breath there to look to have us look at other things too. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think just to reiterate what James said, super important, the role that you all play. And I'm really glad that you all have taken the time out of your day and your lives to really be a part of this. And a little bit about what I do at Transit Services. I oversee a couple of different programs, like the mobility, commuter, and employer services programs, and also transit and transportation planning. So I work very closely with Sarah, so we see each other a lot. And yeah, if you have any questions regarding anything in those areas, feel free to reach out anytime.
I have noted that Charles just joined the call. Charles,
hi, everyone.
Are you able to hear us?
Yes, I am. How's everyone doing?
Great. And so Charles has been approved for remote participation. Charles, for the record, will you say where you're participating? Just the city and state is fine.
Oh, Arlington, Virginia.
Okay, thank you.
And for the record, Rain just wrote in and said she will not make it.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Well, thank you again for coming out. And we're happy that you are here to support us in our efforts into making our transit, you know, a little bit more pleasant and much more comfortable for our riders. I don't think we have any public comments. Did we receive any emails?
No, we don't have any, and there are no members from the public present tonight.
Okay. Very good. Well, then we could just move right into organizational business matters. Can I get an approval of the March 27, 2024 business meeting? I think you all have a copy of the minutes that was distributed. We have a motion to accept the minutes.
I'll move to accept the minutes. I second it.
Any discussion? Any discussion? Any discussion? All in favor of the minutes being approved?
Aye.
In favor, say aye.
Okay.
Any opposed? None opposed. Charles?
Yeah, let's make sure with Charles we get his vote recorded.
Aye.
Charles? Aye, you approve the minutes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Charles. The TAP statement for Transit Summit with Board of Supervisors on the May 29th, 2024. Do we have any updates?
That is the main objective tonight for us to go over the conversation. So I'm glad we do have a quorum. We have an upcoming transit summit that's scheduled for May 29th. That's a Wednesday evening, I believe. And in the last transit summit, I believe, was in 2021, perhaps.
Correct.
And as part of that, the TAB did make a statement to the Board of Supervisors supporting your opinion or other initiatives that you wanted to put forward. So what we wanted to do tonight is I'll turn it over to Scott, and he can outline some of the agenda topics that we have for the Transit Advisory Board, for the Transit Summit. And we are opening it to you all to put together a written statement that you would like to present to the board at that meeting. We do have a tight timeline for it. Unfortunately, it would need to be finalized by Monday, by midday Monday, so that we can get it into the queue and make sure that people on staff are aware of it.
So when we say present it to the board, I think we need to get that clarification too, right? As opposed to being just as part of the item submitted versus actually being presented.
Okay.
We just have to work through that at this point.
Okay.
Just want to make sure we're clear on that.
In the past, somebody from TAB, typically the chair or a designee, has stood up and spoken and read the statement.
Well, when we include in the item, we can ask what they want, and
okay.
I would welcome them to.
Okay.
Yeah. It's what their guides they give us and what you all want.
All right.
Okay. So at a high level, the first item is the local fixed route service item. And essentially, we will go over all of the same ridership numbers that we're seeing here, right, that we go over every couple of months. The ones that we're going over at the board at Transit Summit will actually be on a route by route basis. It's going to show, you know, a bunch of the Silver Line routes that are running less than 1.5 riders a day. I'm sorry, per revenue hour. That's already bad enough. It, as opposed to the legacy local routes that exist right now, they're running at about, when you average out those routes, they're at about 6 an hour. So 6 riders per revenue hour in the local fixed route, legacy routes, and then the Silver Line. Now, that's not uncommon. This is what we're going to explain to the board, that, you know, it takes, usually takes 1 to 2 years. I actually say 2 to 3 years for a route to mature. So we're going to have those conversations with the board basically state this is our goal, right, is to allow them 2 years to mature. One of the things that we're going to do once we kind of get through the metrics conversation is we're going to talk about the current performance metrics, and then we're going to talk about maybe changing them up a little bit. Right now, the revenue, riders per revenue hour, the way that the metrics read, is it basically says if it's half of what the, any route that has half of what the system is as a whole, so if the system's at 6, the route should be at 3, no less than 3 for it to continue in existence and under its current form. If not, then we would adjust it, move it, change it, or maybe even eliminate it. Now, one of the things that has changed since then is our board has done a very good job of creating a comprehensive plan in 2019 and then a countywide transportation plan in 2019 that has a lot of accessibility and equity language in it. On top of that, a lot of the new developments that are coming on board have been basically any new applications that come in, they're being required to have affordable dwelling units in them. So from a transit perspective, we are looking at all of those board policies and saying, from an accessibility standpoint, we feel like it's our job to serve those, right? If the board's policy is to get them into the county, then it's our job to serve those. What that looks like and getting into the weeds of what that looks like and how soon we get there is we're not there yet. Okay, so if keeping it at a high level, that's really where we're going with the discussion with the board. So we're going to try to explain, basically there's different coverages, right? There's different ways to run transit, to operate transit, and transit is changing all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 1950s, you basically ran, you know, a fixed route, and that's all you ran, essentially, right? And then there was bus stops everywhere because people were standing out because they didn't know when the buses were coming, which is why you were protecting you from the rain and all 9 yards, right? Well, now you've got apps that tell you when the bus is coming, so you don't have to stand out there. You can get there when you're ready to get there, when the bus is going to get there and time it, and that kind of thing. So it changes how you operate transit. So the coverage, if you're looking at it from a coverage perspective, we may take all of our resources and spread them out throughout the county to cover as many affordable dwelling units, high density residential areas, employment hubs, as much of that as possible. Now that comes, there are pros and cons to that. We kind of go through those. And then there's also a focused scenario where you're in your lower income area in particular, right? What I call our legacy fixed routes that are doing much better, right? They're averaging, some of them are averaging over 8 or 9, and the majority of them are averaging right around 6. Those are at 45 to 60 minute headways, right? Well, we know in the transit industry that 20 minute headways are where you should be, right? 20 minutes or less. So a focus strategy would be to take as many of your resources as possible and focus them on those particular routes. So as we measure and monitor our current transit system, the question starts to become, how do we measure the new Silver Line routes? Not so much how, but we're presenting on what we think should, how they should be measured. And then if they're not, after 2 years, if we make some adjustments or if they're just really not doing well, we decide to pull them back. How do you provide accessibility to this area that you are already providing accessibility to? Because even if it's 1.5 people an hour, that's still 1.5 people or one person trying to get to work, right? And it may be that you're their only option, that kind of thing. So accessibility becomes part of the definition of a successful transit system, right? So that would be the focused area if you shifted all of those to your legacy routes. And then there's the hybrid strategy, which essentially kind of takes a little bit of both. And essentially a hybrid strategy would be something along the lines of any routes that are existing right now. Let's just say you've got 5 or 6 or 7 routes that aren't doing very well and you decide that you're not going to have them in place anymore. Well, again, transit is evolving. So one of the things that, you know, we're looking at doing is introducing microtransit. So in areas where fixed routes aren't doing well, and then we've got 4, 5, or 6 buses, you know, taken up in those spaces, right? Depending on how big that area is, we could knock it down to 1 or 2 buses, you know, basically draw an area. And now that becomes a microtransit area, right? It's not Uber. We're not coming to your house and picking you up and dropping you off at where you need to go. We'll drop you off from bus stop to bus stop, but they'll be strategically placed within a quarter mile of affordable dwelling units, within a quarter mile of hubs, within a quarter of a mile of you know, high density residential, whatever it happens to be. And with the goal on that one, obviously, of trying to get those above 3, right, to run those above 3, and then taking the resources that were there and shifting them over into the lower income areas and getting them into better frequencies. Mm-hmm. So I got a little bit in the weeds, but not a lot. I wasn't going to go on a route by route basis, but I want to kind of tell you that's really in a nutshell what probably an hour and a half of the transit zone is going to be once they start kind of bantering back and forth for the local fixed route side. All right. The next item on there is going to be a paratransit item. Now, the paratransit issue comes in is the current board policy says we got to follow federal minimums, right? Mm-hmm. Federal minimum definition, the FDA, is if you run a local fixed route from point A to point B, you have to provide paratransit within 3/4 of a mile of that route from point A to point B. So the concern that has come up, and it actually has already hit us in a couple on weekends when we had this, was we started serving paratransit folks that were on those routes, and then the routes got pulled away. Now, technically, you're not covering that area anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from a staff perspective, we're all in agreement. We've got to figure out how to handle that, right? And it really needs to be handled at a board level. Right, not at us making willy-nilly decisions on who we're going to do and not do. It needs to be at a higher level. So we'll throw a couple of options out there for them on that. What exactly those options are, we're not quite there yet, but you know, we're close. Essentially, it could go a couple of different ways, right? One will be go back to the same standard they have, and it is what it is, right? The second one could be grandfather them in, if they're already in the system, you know, keep them in the system and serve them. We can do that with our software. And then the third one could be, you know, basically to maybe to keep it equitable is if you're already serving that area and there's already riders in that area, even if you move the route over, still keep that as part of the footprint. So that's the paratransit item in a nutshell.
Bring them to the other items, should we maybe pause and see if there's any questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions? It's a lot to take in. If I'm talking too fast, please let me know. You guys know me well enough to.
So my understanding is of the run of show, as it were, at the Transit Summit is that Transit Advisory Board would have a chance to give its statement to say, set the tone, break out the community's vision of what transit should and what we are working very hard to make it so. And then it's time for Scott to get up there and get into the weeds.
Well, hopefully it's not Scott. It'll be part me, it'll be a team effort, but yes, the answer to your question is right. Yes.
But you might, like, I don't want to put things in your heads, but for paratransit, you might put in that paratransit's great service. We want to either maintain or grow it. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. Not because one of the options is to decrease it, right? And that's based on the current policy. Mm-hmm. So you don't really need to get into sticks where they want different options from us. It doesn't mean we have an opinion which option we want,
right?
But you should. So paratransit's important to the community. You should just make that statement that you don't want to see it decreased in any way. It doesn't have to be any plan or anything. Mm-hmm. And that helps drive the opinion. Mm-hmm. And even in the other area, the local and fixed, if I can get back to it.
Accessibility, productivity, mobility.
Yeah, it might be just
mobility, you know, it's good for the community.
Yeah, exactly.
And, all right, so.
And Silver Line might, you know.
Not to take over anything.
No, you're not taking over anything.
I've started throwing some things together because the idea being sometimes people on the board forget that public transit is in fact a common good. Mm-hmm. And so being able to start with that of, okay, the community deems this an important common good. This is what we pay taxes for. It's the accessibility, the productivity, the mobility, the career mobility, the opportunities, the equity in terms of paratransit that we can't, as you say, we can't go backwards. We need to be continue to move forward or maintain or grow it. But also the reminder that every single passenger is one less car on Route 7.
Yeah, that's something that you can put in there.
Yeah, so that was my idea.
And the Silver Line maturity could tie into that because it needs, Silver Line shouldn't go away. It needs.
No. That redundancy is a good thing in terms of redundancy and synergy are excellent in terms of public transit because then they create more opportunities for the productivity to maintain or grow, for mobility to maintain or grow.
Right.
So that was where I was gonna go with that. I just have very vague notes at the moment, so.
So it, again, I think everything you're saying is perfectly perfect, for the lack of a better statement.
Okay.
It is, you know, exactly, you know, keeping it at a higher level like that and what this transit advisory board would like to see happen in the transit as we move forward. Again, like Jamie said, we really don't want you in the sticks. We want you to support, you know, we want you to have your vision for what you think transit should be. What should we be doing on the local fixed route from your standpoint? What should we be doing on paratransit from your standpoint? You know, what should we be doing on commuter bus from your standpoint? You know, and I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, please don't lose sight of there are constraints. There's budget constraints and resources restraints as in rolling stock buses and that kind of thing. And the only reason I say that is in past transit summits, we've had transit advisory boards or commuter bus advisory boards way back in the day, but would go in there and with kind of pie in the sky, whoop, and it was like, you know, it kind of left the board going like, well, yeah, you know, that's, we can't do all that. That's crazy, you know? So I would try to keep it in a more realistic environment. And I would keep it in, you know, how you'd like to see this grow. I think one of the things that's going to be important, again, I don't, like Jamie just said, I don't want to steer what you're going to say, but I will say that it is important to look to the future of transit versus making decisions about transit, about how we're operating right now and the ridership that's going on right now, right? Because transit is not, it's not like walking into a room and flipping a switch and you put buses in and they come, you know, they're going to be on it the next day. It is a slow moving process.
I'll say this too, working with county councils and other counties, so this board gets it with transit. They really do. And they care about the human element to it. I was actually impressed by a few of them. They actually could spell transit. Like, they get it. You know, a lot of them don't. They understand the value. So I think your statement, what your statement's going to do is if there is a constraint, like a budget constraint, your statement might have them tell us, go look at that constraint again and try to figure it out. I think that's where your role is, right? To make us go look at the hard things again and make sure, okay, can we look at this again, you know? And I think your statement, if it does that, it does a world of good. And it's an outside voice. Like, I'm not looking for your statement to match exactly what our options are. It's right. Not. It's a good thing, you know.
Right.
It will help drive to the conversation. So does that help? Hopefully.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well said.
Yep.
Do you have any data on well, of course you have the data on routes that are no longer, and if they had members of the community who you know, did ride paratransit. So you talked about, you know, routes ending and, you know, minimally having a 3-mile radius. You know, what did you do in that case? You have case scenarios, you know, that we've had that situation.
So we didn't have scenarios, plural, and they weren't routes that were canceled.
Okay.
Essentially, in that particular case that I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
we have a footprint of where we're operating local fixture of service Monday through Friday.
Right.
Well, unbeknownst to us,
mm-hmm.
our contractor was carrying that same footprint into the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So on Saturdays where we only had 9 routes running, they were still providing the services if all of those other routes were operating.
Mm-hmm.
So in that particular case, I think there were 2 or 3 people that were being served on Saturdays in areas where we didn't have routes actually operating.
Right.
So when we just opted to change and go to follow the federal minimum mandates,
mm-hmm.
it caused a problem.
Right.
Because there was three people that were now not being served that had been riding the bus for years.
Right.
out of those areas.
Right.
So that was really kind of what prompted the conversation. We ended up saying, just put it back the way it was, right?
Right.
Do the footprint, allow them to ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then really we're kind of addressing that now at the Silver Line to really address, the Transit Summit to address that exact situation.
Hey, you might want to include weekend service because mm-hmm. you're right on.
Absolutely.
For everything.
Yeah.
So that's that's another big point. We really don't have weekend service.
That's what I, you know, from my standpoint in terms of our comment, want to make sure that we focus on, even if it is one person, want to advocate for that one person,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then everything you said, obviously that was, you know, right on point, but I just want to make sure that we call that out. Cause that's what my role is, you know, here is to advocate for, you know, the least of it. So.
Great point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And power's growing too, just to make that point.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. So yeah, well, I'll go over the ridership numbers here in a minute and we'll see them. So yes. And we'll talk about that. So really we were at item 2 is paratransit. Item 3 is going to be a fare free discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got these in the right order. And obviously we've talked about this in the past about the fare free discussion on local fixed route and paratransit only.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got any input on that, that's really kind of you know, again, that's pretty much a self-explanatory thing, keeping it at a high level. Right now, for everybody who doesn't know, the fares are $1 and they're $2 on paratransit. So we're talking about going fare free, and all to remind everybody, it really stemmed from a board member initiative asking us about free fares for students. And it was logistically a challenge to do that because all the schools in the county have different IDs and different systems, and they all have different beliefs on parental consent, non-parental consent, who can get what, who cannot get what. So it became very challenging, and we took that back to the board. It kind of worked its way into a free fare discussion.
And for intel for this group, they can go back and look at Finance or TLUC. That's the recordings that we've talked about on this,
yeah,
with them. If you haven't seen, that'll help.
Yeah,
it's back in January.
Yeah, we can get the dates of the if you want to watch. Yes. It's okay. You know, just you might fall asleep.
Okay.
Scott's presenting.
So. Actually, most of them I wasn't presenting. You'll be awake.
Scott, approximately what portion of operating expenses do the revenues currently?
On the local fixed route side, they're minimal. So on the local fixed route,
5% or 10%?
Not even. I'd have to do the math in my head. I mean, you're looking at about fares, you're looking at about $360,000 a year versus I want to say combined local fixed route and paratransit is probably sitting in the $10-11 million range.
Okay.
So it's not much.
Single digit.
Yeah.
Sort of
low single digits.
Going free fare, the bottom line is it's not going to cost very much.
Right. And it's even, again, I wasn't going to get into the weeds, but there are other things at play. The fare boxes are obsolete, so we have to buy new fare boxes. They're about $45,000 a piece. Yeah. So if you're not going that way, then that's 60 buses. You don't have to put $45,000 a piece in fare boxes on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, which makes that trade-off even easier for the first year or two.
Sure.
And then after that, you're going to have to start. Obviously, there's an exponential cost to it. But, you know, the whole point of going fare free is to, you know, make it available to everybody, right? So, you know, and again, I'll just give you, wasn't going to get into the weeds, but I love statistics. So one of the statistics is it's easier to get people that ride the bus to ride the bus more often than it is to get new riders onto the bus. So one of the things that we're talking about is, and you know, we're not in, you know, most of us or a lot of us at this table aren't in a, if not all of us are not in a situation where a dollar fare would make or break us. But there's a lot of people that are, that they can only ride 3 days a week because that's what they can afford to ride. Whereas if it was free fare, maybe now they might be riding 5 or 6 or 7 days a week to get the various jobs and things. So it does matter, I guess, is what I'm saying. So yes.
Are any of our neighboring jurisdictions fare free? I haven't heard.
Alexandria is. Yeah, Alexandria's been fare free for a little over a year now. They saw a pretty massive spike in ridership when they did that. I mean, to the tune of, I want to say 25%.
Yeah. And
if you
watch TLUC. So our consultant presented, and they further study was looking at case studies around the country that you see what happened in those areas. One of them, I think, was North Carolina. Chapel Hill,
yeah.
And ridership goes up, you know, and they show what they were charging, which was similar to what we charge and what it going down to zero.
Yeah.
So they show some of the impacts,
yeah,
of it.
And I can say that's a January TLUC meeting. So
we
and I think there's only one. I think there's only one in there. So
yeah,
in January. So, but we can get to the exact date. But if you go on to Loudoun.gov and then go to Loudoun.gov/BOS and go to that, all you got to do is click on the TLUC link and click in January. There should be one link in there, I think. There, TLUC only goes once a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there'll only be one link in there.
Your letter might just be you support it or you support looking at it further,
right?
You know, or
yeah,
you know, it would impact the budget and we might cut stuff elsewhere, which that's not the case, but
right,
that's what you can model. It's pretty, it's either do it or don't, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the last item coming in is the commuter bus. And essentially, you know, we have to take a, you know, a pretty healthy look at the existing system and the existing routes. You know, I think we had this conversation last time that there's about 11 routes that are carrying less than 10 people a day on it. So, you know, that's not good, right? So those routes are really, you know, they really should be subject to going away is really what they should be. But we also have park and ride lots spread throughout the county that we're using. And is that the most efficient way to operate? You know, should we consolidate park and ride lots? You know, so you're getting more people in one place and you're kind of going back to what's old is new again. That's how we started commuter bus. It started with a couple of park and ride lots in the middle of the county. And then once they grew big enough to spread out, then you spread out. And so that's another part of the discussion that's going to come in. And then, you know, in spirit of transparency, we've talked about possible fare increases also in that. So at a high level, you know, you want to consider that and you're, you know, if you want to talk to that, that's up to you guys. But those are the items that are going to be in there. And those are basically the topics that we're going to have that are going to be in there.
Have you got any surveys, Scott, about the commuter buses in terms of what the, you know, people in the community think about them or whether or not? Because for me, I don't ride them anymore, but when that's a sad thing because I thought they were just so convenient, comfortable.
People love them.
People love them, yeah.
Okay. The problem is there's a lot of you, right? There are a lot of people say, I used to ride that bus every day. Yeah. I used to ride in the DC all the time. Right. And that's the problem.
It's not bad. There's routes that are very healthy.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's it's not the whole network. They're not.
881 and 881s are doing pretty good.
The ones that you're on.
There's no option on the table to get rid of all of them.
Yeah. Right.
No.
There's an option to consolidate.
There's an option to consolidate. Okay. There's an option. There's currently 50. And I'll get in a little bit more into it.
There's still a ride home.
Yeah. There are 50 routes altogether, 23 a.m., 27 p.m.
Okay.
All right. The 27 p.m. are obviously there because you're going later into the evening, right? And, mm-hmm. and you got some earlier ones. That's the four extra different between the two. So 11 of them are, we're looking to take 11 of them away. Majority of them are going to the Pentagon, mm-hmm. To be honest with you. So, I mean, those are the ones, but the routes that you're talking about, yeah, we're not talking about touching any of the ones that are basically above 10 riders a day. I mean, it's 10 riders a trip, right? Is really what it is in the commuter bus world. So we're not advocating for that at all. You know, but I would, you know, just say that every year it's going to be, we're trying to let this campaign kind of be organic, right? Kind of take it where it's going to go. So the real question is, you know, from your guys' standpoint, what's your stance on commuter bus and where do they go and from that perspective?
Because remember, we look at things different. We look at budget, ridership, yeah. Yeah, these two routes, but there might be a reason in the community why those routes are so important. Mm-hmm. That's why you need your perspective mm-hmm. to talk about the value of this service, like you said.
Yeah. And to Jamie's point, I would like to point out one other thing, and that is, for those of you who have used it, or if you have an opinion on it, you know, there are, because rail was now, there was a lot of money spent to bring rail to the county, there's a lot of, and understandably, you know, concern about essentially running mirror service, right? Where you're running a bus down exactly where the rail is running to. So, you know, I give that data point to you to just think about as you're kind of working through your process, because that's what the board has to work through, right? They've got to think about where they put their money and where they've spent their money and what makes sense and how to run this transit system. You know, again, there's differing opinions on it, right, from that perspective. So
in our role at the summit, we're going to be given options and you're going to hear us. We're not advocating any of those options more than others. We're really trying to put it in their hands to make decisions so they can make the strategic decisions. Then we come back and come up with those plans and then they move and then we move forward and you help mm-hmm. as well. But again, they need to hear from you too. So if they use that when they come up with whatever options they want us to either further into, working forward with, or whatever they come up with, where, hey, these options aren't good enough, come back with more, but we don't know. Our agenda is simply, what do we want to be here in Atlantic County with transit? And transit's a much different world, since, especially since COVID. You have microtransit, you have mobility services now with apps, like you can use Uber if you want. There's so many different options now, the fixed assets. We want to understand where we want to go with this, but the community has to be involved, and we just won't get it right. So whatever you can do with your recommendations, do it. Tell what you think.
Yeah. Scott, one of your key metrics is riders per revenue hour. A lot of these questions about the long haul service and then the fixed routes could be answered by one level of data deeper, and that's, where are people riding from what stop to what stop, or what are their destinations? Go to the Pentagon, there are alternates. You can jump on the yellow line or the northern blue line and get across the river. Some expense there, but at least you're not keeping anybody from using it. But that data is not really available, is it?
The stop level is not really available yet. We're working on that, but we're working on that through our APCs, automated passenger counters, or on a bus. That's really the only place we can get that level of information. And the problem with it is I don't know, like, if 15 people get on at Del South, right, or Stone Ridge, and 10 people get on at Eastgate, right, because it goes to Eastgate next, and then 15 people get off at the Pentagon. I don't know if they got on at Eastgate. I don't know if they got on at Del South, or I don't know if they got on both.
You have to, right? So a ridership survey.
Yes. So we can do that for existing. That, I mean, when we do route optimizations on the commuter bus side, especially, you know, actually, this is interesting for me, because pre-COVID, I did this a lot, but it was because we had too many people on the bus and we were trying to figure out how to split them and get them to where they were going, right? That was the optimization we were doing before. Well, now it's the opposite optimization. It's like, okay, if I've got, you know, I look today, we've got 100 people going to Pentagon, right? Well, that's only 50 people less or 100 people less than was doing it pre-COVID, but we just had a bunch more people going in DC. Now, to your point, and I'm getting a little bit into the weeds as being an ops guy. Yes, there are options to get to the Pentagon. But if you live in Stone Ridge and you're going to the Pentagon,
I don't want to fool around.
Well, it's not just that. It's literally what's your time worth, right? You have to define that yourself as what your time worth. To take a commuter bus from Stone Ridge to the Pentagon is about a 45-minute trip, even in the AM peak, because we get to go down the toll road, we get to go down the HOV, we get to stay on 66, we get to go everywhere, right, being a bus. On the, you can get there on the Silver Line, and it's very, and even if we make the fares free, and you can still leave Stone Ridge, your same parking ride lot, and get to the Silver Line to go, but at a minimum, you know, you're adding, if everything goes right connection-wise, and I've already done this timing, you're adding 20 minutes a trip. So you're losing 40 minutes of your day both directions to do that. Well, that's a real thing. Sure. That's a real thing for, you know, and that's not for me to fight that battle, right? That's what Jamie keeps saying. It's really up to the folks that need it, right? It's up to the Transit Advisory Board. It's up to the folks that are riding the bus to explain their take on why it's different for them, right? So I think that's really, and I do want to take a minute to just kind of reiterate what I just said there, because it really is not about the transit center. Every one of you have a transit or has a board of supervisors representative, right? Those conversations can happen without us, right? They should be coming from you to them. Whether you want to do it as a transit board member or whether you want to do it as a commuter bus driver, that's our goal as people that live in this county, right? Is to tell, you know, to give information to our supervisors to say what's important.
And they want to listen.
And they do.
They do. It's genuine. It's good to see.
Yeah. And I think Jamie hit the nail on the head. The majority of this board is very much pro transit. So, you know, and they're looking for us for guidance on how to grow this or how to, what to do with this. And it's our job to paint a picture to show how we can grow it responsibly. Right, I think is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So any input or feedback that you can give to them on your level is welcome.
And I would, again, I would, if you have time to go back and look at the presentations that we gave you, I think that'll really help you, especially some of the questions that were asked of us and then asking for the summit, what God is here, I think that'll really help you. It's not too much time. How much, how long did they last? I forgot.
One, two.
Yeah, all together. Then wasn't too bad.
All right, so I'm going to show you a couple of ridership graphs here that are really going to kind of talk about when you're starting to ask the question. So this, the only reason I'm showing it to you on this one is because the one in your paper only goes through March. This one actually goes through the end of April because we have a whole month. So as you can see, you know, obviously things, obviously all the routes are actually climbing in the right direction. Right, the top blue line are your local routes. Those are your what I would classify as your legacy routes, as your low income routes. The gold line or yellow line, depending on how it's showing up there, your commuter bus routes. And then your purple or dark blue, and then how your eyes show, is your silver line routes. And the numbers are the actual numbers of people that we carried in that particular month.
And silver line started when?
Silver line started really May 1 of 2023. So silver line itself started in you're correct, started in
Metro one.
Well, it did start November 15th of 2022. But our contractor didn't have enough
drivers at that rate
or whatever.
So it was fully functional about a year ago.
Fully functional May 1 was
year ago. Okay,
so you just hit, we just hit a year.
Yeah, that's, I think that's important to understand.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. So, you know, commuter bus, to kind of put it in perspective, is we're averaging about 620 riders a day now. So pre-pandemic, you were at about 2,600 riders a day. So it's a, that's really the difference between those two. The silver, or the, I'm sorry, the legacy routes, we're actually going to be in 2024, if I remember my numbers correctly, we're going to actually be higher for the first time than we've been. Ridership on those routes will be higher than they were pre-pandemic. Silver line routes, obviously, even if I compare them to the previous silver line routes that existed when we were serving Wheelie Rest and East, and a combination of Wheelie Rest and East and West Falls Church, we're still well below those numbers. And that really speaks to the teleworking environment, right? Because those, the folks that were using those routes really were commuters too.
The other recent impact that we're hoping will help is marketing.
Yeah.
We haven't marketed the system until recently. We were working on some things with a contractor first, but we've seen some growth.
Yeah, you can see some of the trend line for the local and also for the paratransit. We really include a lot of marketing in those areas. You can see it's going up from March on, so.
Because we see a lot of it in on the Facebook.
Oh, you do see it?
Oh, yes.
Okay, great.
I see some of our cab members doing a good job with in modeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I share when I see it there, I share it from my.
You do. Okay.
Yeah. So
thank you so much.
Yeah. Hey, I want to say on the commuter routes that we might start seeing more ridership soon, Scott, because I know for the federal governments, the agencies, they've been trying to get workers to go back in for a while. And early it was going to, okay, you know, January, everybody back in office. And, but they gave us a reprieve till July. So I think you'll start to see either more commuter buses or more people taking the on the Silver Line, because basically workers are forced to go back in starting in July. That's what they said. That's the mandate.
Usually Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, when we see it already in the.
But that's something you can put in your organization. Yeah, telework impacts is federal workforce. And that's stuff he did. We brought that up.
Yeah. One of the things for the marketing, especially with the Silver Line, is it increased the marketing in terms of people who don't need to go into DC. They always, people, again, anecdotal, not data, but the people who work in Tyson's. The people who want to live here and really just don't want to be rolling down Route 7 or the toll road every day. And we have this great option now, and it's synergetic. It's at least better complementary to the commuter bus and having to go into DC or maybe getting a Natskin. And that's a lot less time on the metro. So we're getting there. It's just a matter of getting the word out.
That could be in your. That's another. Yeah. So everything you're saying is
perfect. All right.
You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, we know this last time it's the hardest one in our view, especially for the community. So it's because there's conflicts there between what the community really wants, some of the part of the community, and what the data is telling us is disconnect there. So again, whatever the board wants, we'll make happen. If they'll be
so. Here's another new wrinkle. Pre-COVID or pre-pandemic, there weren't any fees on I-66, so you could easily drive in to work. But now the fees are there, and they're pretty steep during rush hour. So that also, you know, again, when the federal folks have to go in, now they have to drive. And once they get dinged a couple of times by those $24 each way fees, they're going to say, you know what, I need another option. Then that also might drive some more people.
You know, that's the first one my staff hasn't told me about, so I'm going to have to fire all of them.
Thanks, y'all.
First time I heard of them, right? Did we know that?
I didn't realize.
That's a good point. That's a great point.
It's congested. It's gone up to as high as $48.50.
I was going to say, I think.
Oh, it's unbelievable, and it hurts every time when you get on there. So even if you think, oh, I'll drive, you know, it's no big deal, I can drive. But when you get hit with that $30, $40, $50 combined with the inflation and, you know, buying milk, you know, you're like, dude, I've got to come up with something else. Hey, I've got to do something else.
That's a good point, Russ. I'm going to have a few open positions here. I need thinkers. Get my info off Sarah. Bet you get it before Monday.
Oh my.
All right. So is that so those 4 points and all of the, I'll draft up something tonight and start sending it around to people. I was mainly using, going off of the future goals from our annual report.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this has got a lot of meat on it. We'll get it. We'll make it happen, Sarah.
And you can include anything. The only thing we're hoping we can stay focused on these four elements and then the sub elements, because they can go in all different directions.
You could just like go off into, and yeah. Then when but you bring folks from West Virginia.
Well, that's me. There you go. But yeah, you put in whatever you want.
Afford to live here anymore. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we need commuter service from West Virginia.
Across state lines.
They're doing a study right now. Didn't you tell it to start?
Yeah, I saw it.
All right, so just clicking over in ridership graphs. This is a this is paratransit service. Paratransit ridership. So what it's showing is the average daily ridership per month, right? So you're at 54, 53. This is the first time I've looked at this graph, so I'm gonna have to go back and look. It's actually higher than that. What's watering this down is the fact that he's probably dividing it by 7 days a week when it should be divided by 5 days a week. because I know for a fact that we're averaging closer to 70, between 70 and 80 riders a day on Monday through Friday. We are going to hit in 2024, we're going to hit 18,000 rides and for paratransit for the fiscal year of 2024. And the highest we hit pre-pandemic was 12,000. So we are significantly higher than we were even pre-pandemic. Now, there's two reasons for that. The biggest reason is our footprint expanded, so we're serving more people. But another big reason for that is our marketing, because people are starting to realize that we're here and we can do this. And word of mouth is now starting to get out there that, hey, I can't drive, but I can ride this bus, mm-hmm. right? They'll come and get me. So even though it's an eligibility criteria, we already know by the unmet needs of the study that we did, unmet transportation needs of seniors and disabled folks in Loudoun County that we did a couple of years ago, that there's close to 10% of the folks in this county fit into that category.
Mm-hmm. So how many vehicles do you have dedicated to the service?
Right now, we only have eight. Seven of them are on the road at any given time.
And
just looking at this, Scott, what I notice is we don't have any of the major, when I say we, but you know, paratransit doesn't have any of the major dips.
Yeah.
It's pretty constant all the way through. Mm-hmm. So for me, that says, you know, don't do anything but increase, because you went from, you know, your numbers pre-COVID into now, you know, so that says that we're going to need more than eight cars.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I don't see any dips.
So again, that's something you need to add to your letter, because your observations are spot on.
Yeah,
spot on. So I'll give you a little hint too. What's important about looking at, a lot of people ask me this question, the reason you look at the average ridership per day on any given route is because operating days in a month fluctuate, right? Monday through Fridays fluctuate every month, right? Yeah. This April, you might have 20 operating days in it. Next April, you might have 22,
sure.
right? Because it depends on where it breaks on Saturdays and Sundays and all that kind of thing. So this metric allows you to actually look at and compare, all right, if I'm carrying 60 riders a day, 65 riders a day on average, mm-hmm. last year I was, you know, so pre-pandemic, I can tell you right now we were between 40 and 45 riders a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've almost, you know, we're 1.5, 1.75 times that number on most days.
Mm-hmm.
Fridays tends to come down a little bit, and Saturdays waters that down a little bit. But
this really spurred us on to looking at microtransit and on demand, because it's the same similar vehicle type. It's not door to door,
right?
But for us, thinking the best scenario is shared assets. So if we have those on demand vehicles and we put them in areas that maybe fixed routes are kind of underperforming,
mm-hmm.
and we can try to market and get ridership up, because it's a little more flexible, which people want.
Mm-hmm.
They might have an app that comes Zone 2, Bus 3 on here and it comes, but that asset can be used for this too, to help grow this. And then we're doing it at a least cost, because we're sharing that asset.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. When you see that, like, as a business person, when I see that, that's a stable system. Now mm-hmm. it's time to grow, mm-hmm. because it's where you want it to be.
Right. And as far as your cars are concerned, do you subcontract any of the rides, or is this all coming straight out of the local, the government, your office? Is any subcontracting going on? The reason I asked is because we had a resource fair this past Friday. We had quite a few people coming in who had transit small businesses. We sent them over to Stacy, because Stacy had a table there.
That's good.
But I was thinking, I was like, wow, at least three. So three people I met had small business, driving. So I was just wondering, is that something that you do in your office? Do you?
So we don't subcontract out, but mm-hmm. Stacy's. The whole point of Stacy's position, and Gladys can speak more to this, was created on the premise of providing a single point of contact for the county to be able to get to those providers.
Okay.
There were you want to expand on?
Yeah, I was gonna say, so what's happening is a couple different things. So you get folks who apply for paratransit service who may get denied for various reasons, or folks who need to get someplace, but maybe local transit isn't available or convenient for them. So they get in contact with us looking for other transportation solutions. So we have a short list right now of transportation providers, nonprofits, private sector type folks who offer services. Some of them are free, some of them aren't. And depending on what their needs are, we can connect them to services. So if you know of anybody who, like you had just mentioned, some providers, that's perfect. Send them our way.
Right.
And then we can see if they'd want to be a part of our database.
Right.
That folks can tap into.
Right. Yeah. We sent them right over to the table. I'm not sure, you know, what happened after they got over there to Stacy, but I did. And that's a good point, because I do know of situations, medical visits that you can make, and you have to actually have a person pick you up.
Yeah.
You know, drop you off. Yeah. So. And so in cases like that, do you guys provide someone from that database?
Yes, if somebody is willing to share their information and there's a match, we'll certainly provide them with that information. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole point of Stacy's job is to, you know, our paratransit, while we love it, is very restrictive. You've got to be within 3/4 of a mile of a route on the beginning and the end of your pickup and drop off, right? Whereas, you know, the other 26 or whatever it is providers that we have in this county to do that, they don't have those restrictions, so they can take you into other places. And I think as we grow, part of that conversation that we were talking about earlier about the footprint conversation, you know, it won't take too many years, but before that footprint, if we're moving routes around, if we end up moving routes around, it's going to encompass a better part of the county anyway, right? That's going to happen. But you're always going to be in this particular area, with this particular demographic of folks. We're going to always be chasing that, because we're going to never, it's an area to put it, to give you a statistical analysis, right? There's roughly 40,000 folks in the county that match that criteria. And we're providing this year, we're providing the most ever at 18,000 rides.
Right.
That means we provided less than half of them one ride in the year.
And we're I don't think we answered your question fully. So we use a contractor for the service, but they use our assets. So we own the vehicle, but the drivers are actually contractors under contract with us.
Sure.
And then we have the oversight and we manage it that way.
Got it. Okay.
If they're allowed to use subcontractors, unless there's something.
Well, no, they are, but that's for the transit services only.
Right.
Right. I think she's talking about the subcontractors coming in. Yes, they could. Like if they wanted to subcontract out more buses for paratransit and they wanted to do that, they can certainly do that in the contract.
Right.
With them, they can do that. They wouldn't contract through us.
Right.
They would contract through Keolis, our contractor, to do that. So that is a viable option for them.
Okay.
But again, the same parameters fit. They still have to be within the 3/4 of a mile of our routes. I thought in that particular case, these folks were wanting to be another provider for the entire county.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful part about our private-public partners or CHIPs, right? Where a lot of them are getting money from the county anyway under 501c3 statuses.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks are providing anything from doctor's visits to, and they don't operate on the same hours that we do. They operate in different hours. Meals for Wheels falls into that category where they're providing that. Echo, you know, Every Citizen Has an Opportunity falls into that. So there's a lot of those providers that are out there. Quite frankly, it would be nice to have some other private providers that are actual companies in there, because the one thing when we did that study, and it stuck out like a sore thumb to me, is a lot of these companies, a lot of these private companies rely on volunteers.
Yeah.
And you got a lot of good-hearted people there, but it's like, you know, your good-heartedness only goes a certain, like, I can only do Thursdays from 2 to 4, you know? And it's like, they need a ride on Saturday, you know? So that makes it tough on these folks, right? To try to schedule that stuff in. The other piece of it is when we tried to quantify that in that study, none of them keep statistics. Like all of these companies, especially with volunteers, they're trying to do what's best, right? They're going to be good RDP. So they're not quantifying, they're not keeping tracks of rides, who's getting picked up, when they're getting picked up, when they're getting dropped off. You know, if you had that kind of data being around, it's a lot easier to now try to start to standardize something and put something in place. But I think that was the biggest disappointment that I had when I went through that study, was that just weren't, the data wasn't there to be able to really, for us to be able to
right.
make a case to start something to yeah. help out.
I think that's probably one of the next steps for our mobility assistance program is to try to engage a lot of those folks yeah. that Scott's mentioning that may not be so well, you know, and a really good process for their data collection mm-hmm. so that we can know who they're serving to. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we can look into and burn like a future phase.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And a lot of those fit into the human services side of the county versus the transit side of the county. So mm-hmm. I think we're also reaching an interesting point of that conversation taking place. For example, Arlington County is a prime example of that, right? They've got, I think, Star. Is it Star in Arlington? Mm-hmm. Anyway, they have Metro Access right. provides their paratransit around their routes, but then they have their human services side has Star Transit that has like another 20 paratransit buses that don't have the restrictions that the 3/4 mile route has with the Metro Access.
Got it.
So it's a separate service mm-hmm. on that side.
So they're filling in for the gaps.
I think that's how it started out exactly.
That's interesting because we are meeting the minimum standard, right? So I guess the mindset is minimum, not, you know, going beyond the minimum.
Well, I think the transit summit, I think when you start asking these questions,
yeah.
right, to the board, or when you start putting these statements out to the board, yeah. that's what makes the board get beyond right. that minimum standard.
Right, right. Okay, thank you. Yeah, this is really good. I know we had this in our.
Yeah, it's in the packet. Mm-hmm. This one's in the packet, sure is. And the other one I had was in the packet. Like I said, I just updated it. So this one was in, but it was only through March, which is why I took it to April. And then this one was only through March, so I took it to April. But yeah, I mean, the paratransit is growing like crazy. It really is. So that's just about it for ridership, and there's everything out there.
Did you do anything different, Scott, in terms of, I know there was some marketing out there, but what do you believe is the reason for the growth?
Well, I think the two biggest things, I think the footprint itself is the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Three Silver Line routes going in, all of those areas were served by Virginia Regional Transit on an on-demand basis. Now, there's two important distinctions here. Mm-hmm. Virginia Regional Transit's on-demand was not paratransit service. It could handle paratransit riders. They were all accessible vans, but anybody could book them.
Right.
So that takes that ride away from a paratransit rider per se. So I think that's part of the reason is now people that were either relying on Virginia Regional Transit and maybe had some issues because they couldn't get enough rides, mm-hmm. now don't have that problem. Because we're in there. It also lowered that pool down because folks that were getting rides were essentially, you know, on demand on a Virginia Regional Transit level is just like an Uber. They're coming to your house, they're picking you up, they're taking your building, you're dropping it off, which is what we do at paratransit, but it's within 3/4 of a mile of our routes. And it's specific to folks that can't get to the bus stops, right? Mm-hmm. Most folks can walk to a 1/4 mile. That's the general rule of thumb in transit. It's got to be within a 1/4. If you're putting a bus stop out there, if it's more than a 1/4 mile away, generally speaking, you're not helping the folks that are there. Mm-hmm. That's why the 3/4 mile minimum mandate mm-hmm. it basically expanded is it gives a 1/2 mile beyond that 1/4 mile for mm-hmm. folks that can walk.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't have to walk, they can ride a wheelchair, right? Mm-hmm. But even the same thing, wheelchair riders tend to be, they can get 1/4 mile if it's a flat space, they can get in there just fine, and we can handle them on our regular buses. We're 100% compliant there and ready for that. But that's what that, that's where the, that's how the Three Quarter Mile got developed, basically.
That's good to know.
So this, that's all the data I have for you folks. If you got any questions or any more questions, let me know. And I think that's it for me, sir. All right.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Scott. You can take a breather.
I think if you go to the last slide, if we switch that to like a calming blue, Scott will come down. I think that was the issue.
See this, this one right here was winding me up.
The pink one.
Oh, the pink one?
Yeah, the pink one got y'all fired up because I think blue is more common. Blue would be better. That's right.
Okay. Well, I think we have.
This is the slide you should start with.
You mean at the start? Well, yeah.
Right.
Down with the blue.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. You're right. Colors matter.
Well, the board will, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. That would get them wound up and it's to start. That's a good point.
I shouldn't have told them. They're writing and they're saying, dark man.
Yeah, if I get email from Rain out, it's in bright red. I'm going to know why.
I mean, diplomacy.
Right.
The inputs are due by the next Monday?
Monday, yes. Midday on Monday.
Okay, so inputs to the.
The final.
Yes, the
your
final.
Accepted so, statement.
Mm-hmm. What we need to do, and I'll get draft anyway.
So what we could do now as board members is that we can pull your ideas together and then forward it to Susie.
Okay.
And she would put something together and send out like a final before she sends it to Sarah.
That'd be great. Okay.
Again, our apologies. It's the process of getting everything finalized on our side to understand what the four elements is to is a
clearances.
Yeah. Sorry, the internal.
So okay. whatever you can provide. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. And if you could do a quick call to whoever you need to speak to, maybe your supervisor, see if he or she has any kind of inputs.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped my supervisor on the street and I talked to her and mm-hmm. voice my opinion.
I don't have to worry about
it. So if there is anything that you have any questions with, I'm sure Ms. Sarah can give us some guidance if we do need that assistance.
Well, okay. Until Monday. Charles will be after Monday. It starts Tuesday.
So, okay. So, I don't know if anybody have any questions.
Okay, so just so I understand your process, you have listened to the items that we're intending to present.
Mm-hmm.
Through email. You're going to provide input to Susie that, and she's going to consolidate it and then share it back out to the group so that everybody can take a look at it and provide some edits if they were misunderstood or had a different objective to what they were stating.
Okay.
And then Susie will send me the final accepted version on Monday. Okay.
And since we are working with a tight timeline, end of day tomorrow, if you have any inputs, is that too short a timeline? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying I won't take anything after.
I want, so we could also send out an email to remind the other board members if they have any inputs, they can provide them. Provide them to you as soon as possible.
Okay.
Is that some the protocol yet? I'm not familiar. Is it okay?
A reminder to the
okay.
tab.
Yeah.
And let them know. I can list the items that we're planning to include in the agenda for the summit. And then you want it by close of business.
Thursday.
Okay, so I'll do that first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the protocol is that someone from the board will present this at the summit. Will read the.
That's an item that we're still getting clarification on.
Okay.
And so that would be worth discussing now, if that is an option for you to to present this and speak before the board? Would you like to designate somebody to?
Put that request in when you send it, and we're going to attach it to the item, right? And then we can say that they would like to give an opening remark, or you don't, you just want to submit the documents, whatever you want.
Human interaction is very important, even if it's just reading our statement.
Okay.
But it influences the format that we will need to use to bring it together.
Yeah. That's the only thing, I have a prior conflict, so.
I'll be there.
Okay, so Susie is willing to step in for me to do that presentation. Had I not this prior conflict, I wouldn't have an issue with presenting to anybody.
It's just part of my, but I'll take it.
Okay.
Ray was front and center at the ribbon cutting for the Silver Line.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was.
Got a picture of him standing next to the chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
They made a mistake and told me I can go up for, okay. I still have my little piece of the ribbon.
You did?
Yes. Okay, you have anything more to?
No.
All right, so just a reminder, our next business meeting is going to be at the maintenance and operation facility. I almost ended up there today. Don't know how, but I was just fighting my GPS, like, why are you taking me wrong and make a U-turn? Oh, so then that's what I called you to make sure that I was going in the right direction. But yeah, so if anybody has, again, if you have any issues with not being able to make those meetings, just make sure you reach out to Ms. Sarah if you need any kind of authorization to be offline. Would there be an option to do that?
Well, we wouldn't be able to give them a tour remotely, but certainly.
Your life.
See, that was my question. They are going to get to do a tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, then July 10th, they're supposed to go on their tour.
Safety vests, all right, you'll take care of it.
Somebody will take care of it, I won't be there. I'll be on vacation.
I'll be with you, Scott.
It's on my wife.
The contractor. Provide the S, just a little.
Yeah, well, they got plenty of money, yeah, we'll make sure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're just trying to.
Oh.
So sorry. Not often.
The conference.
And for all the board members who do not have business cards, please let Ms. Sarah know. So if there's a possibility of you getting some.
Yes.
That'd be great. And for those who ride the services, don't be afraid to share it with those riders. I've done so, I do it every time I'm on the train. They look at me like, what are you selling us now? I'm not selling you anything. Here you go. Reach out and give us your feedback. Mm-hmm. And the feedback comes right to your office, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And everything that, so you don't get bombarded with spam emails. So that's a good thing. Everything gets filtered and gets sent to the right people. Okay.
Okay, yeah. And just for the record, the July meeting is on the 10th. It's at 7:00. The address is 42031 Loudon Center Place, Leesburg.
I'm sorry. Evelyn, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I'll be on vacation.
Okay.
I'll be out of the state of Virginia, but if we have a quorum, I'll, you know, I can always, Zoom in.
Should be able to do that, even though you're getting the tour. I assume you're still going to have a bit of a meeting.
We'll start with a meeting, a brief meeting, approve the minutes, probably recap from the transit summit, and then and then we'll adjourn, and after the meeting's adjourned, then we'll do the tour.
Okay. Would snacks be available?
Snacks.
There's a vending machine.
Bring your tortas.
I just can't believe vacation's more fun than tour to transit. Come on, I would skip my vacation for that.
Yeah, so we will make sure we send out directions for you to get there, because the GPS is going to take you in a little bit of a wonky way, because it's on a campus.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's if you take it, we'll make sure that you understand where to go and park.
Yes, please.
We don't want you in the bus yard itself parking.
Or in the school bus yard.
You have to go through the school bus yard to get to our yard. Okay, so yes, right. We don't want you to do that.
I will get lost. Please do.
So we'll make sure we'll send out a map to you.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming up. Appreciate your graciousness that you're present. You have something to say? Oh. Thanks again for graciousness with your presence and for your inputs. It's very helpful. And we'll surely try to put that, your inputs and your ideas, into our little presentation.
And if it's okay, I will probably attend more as an observer, because I think it's important for me to hear what you have to say. And
you're more than welcome. I don't think anything is restricting that, right?
Mm-hmm. I'll sneak in. I run the facilities too, so I knew that. So.
All right.
Charles, I see your mic is on. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Oh no, I was just getting ready. I was waiting for an opportunity to say, okay, you guys take care.
Yes, Scott.
Do we have a motion to adjourn? Okay, right. Did I jump the gun?
Yeah, I was gonna ask for
No. I take it back. Forget what I said.
Ask a motion to adjourn the meeting. Second, is there a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Meeting is adjourned.
Okay. Ready to do this early?